session number 14749-3.
This is Matt Creel 3. So she'd had no problem?
She had no problems whatever, and she arrived at my uncle's, and we stayed there. I stayed, and my sister stayed naturally, because we had no other relatives in the West. So I was anxious to hear about, my parents, what happened. So I decided I was going to go down to Germany again, across the border, and trying to go from camp to camp. Because there was no transport, there was no post, nothing was going. Nobody had any money. It was an extraordinary time. You just relied on people feeding you, relied on transport if somebody passed, so just leave your lifts. But it was still difficult, actually, to get over the border, because the Austrians closed the borders, too. And so I went on the same way again. We walked over the border by night. There were several people in the same position like me. They wanted to find out where their relatives were. We walked across, and we came to a station, which I don't know now what it was. And there was a train waiting there. And it was a good train, but it was full of American soldiers. And so Windy saw us coming, and he said, he didn't speak German, we didn't speak English. And he sort of said, well, come and have a ride. But we're not supposed to allow you in, because they were only just soldiers. And so he said, we have to hide you if one of our officers come. I think there were two or three of us. And we went in, and they fed us. They gave us food. They were such lovely lot. In that wagon, there were about 20 people. And they were all anxious to please us, except that we couldn't understand them. And I always remember that one day, that one soldier, and he said, I know what I think, he said, you'll understand. Now, and he sat down, and he sang Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht in German. And his parents were German. He didn't speak German because he was an American. But he sang it just for us, just to say, you know, to please us. And we were fed. And one was looking out, somebody's coming. And he threw all the coats over us. And so we were hiding under coats because we wanted to go a longer way, you see. And we thought that was our way of transport. And then two other women, they had cold feet and they went out. And eventually on the next station or the next stop. And I was the only one who stayed on, and I came right into Germany, I think to Nuremberg. The train went, so that was, I think, it was a long way from Austrian border to there with the Americans. And as I say, partly I was hidden, but I was well fed. And then they let us go out in Germany, and I went to the Autobahn and hitched lifts wherever I found out where another camp was, because that was the only communication we had from people for refugees. So they had by then people who passed through these camps. They left the names where they were going, whom they had seen. There was the only information you got was through those camps. So I went right up to nearly to Cologne, to Mainz in Siegerland. It's near Marburg. It's a long way that took me here again weeks and weeks, because it was mostly hitching lifts and walking. And I came up there, and I couldn't find any reference to my parents, to friends, nothing. And so I came to this Siegerland, and I was discouraged by then, I think. And I found a person, funnily enough, whom I knew from our town. And she said... she stopped there too. She was doing actually the same thing, almost like I did. And she said, I'm just living on a farm. We're working just to have our food and to have a bed, because they couldn't pay you. There was no money, but you had food. And the Russian was very bad, because it was in the French zone. You know, the French were the worst of, you know, they got the littles, I should think, little. The Americans were the best, the English after. The French gave very little Russian. So I stayed on the farm for 3.5 years and worked for nothing, just on the farm, which was very hard, especially for a townsperson who hadn't seen a live cow ever in all her life. So I worked there until 48 in the summer. And then this friend who was also on the farm, and she said, oh, did you hear the news? Oh, and we made inquiries, and we went still. And by then, not until about, it was the post was only going locally, not far away. So soldiers, people wandering through. It was an extraordinary thing. The soldiers came and went. It was just by mouth, really, everything. Or had a little letter, if you meet this person on the way. And so there were hundreds of people who were doing the same thing, walking from camp to camp and left their names, picked up names, and then they found me on the farm down there saying, oh, we'll put your name where you are. That was the information, really, where we could find each other, the refugees, that was. And so I stayed down there, and then my friend said, you haven't found your parents, I haven't found my parents, and I just heard that through an agency we can go to England for a year. Girls can go for a year and they get a journey paid if you're on your own, if you wanted to go, and they pay you the journey for a year, domestic or children's work, and you can come home if you wanted to, but you have to go for a year. So she went off. She went to Ware in Hertfordshire, and she stayed there. And then she wrote back to me and she said, well, why don't you come too? And so I did. And I came to England and stayed for a year, and then I stayed down and I'm still here. But it was 12 years until I saw my parents again.
How did you come to meet your parents?
Well, it closed the border. You see, as soon as the war finished in May, the Russians deposed, all the borders were closed, and they didn't move because, it was too cold. They didn't want to go on the road, which they didn't want to. And also, my mother, I had a brother who was in the Navy, and we hadn't heard, and my mother was worried in case they move and my brother comes and he won't find them and we wouldn't find each other. And she got so terribly worried, and she was saying beforehand, I'll never move whatever happens, because if my brother Hans comes home, then he won't find us. And so they stayed, my parents stayed, and they had a jolly bad time down there too, very bad time. So it wasn't, and then they closed the borders, and I think when my father became 65 to 70, and then they opened the borders just for the old people, because the post didn't want to look after older people who couldn't work, so they let them go. So my parents came out, and I've got two sisters in Munich. They got stuck in Munich, both of them, they liked it so much, and so they came to Munich, and through them, and they sort of channeled my parents from me. They did actually everything. And they became into a transit camp, and then they found them accommodation, and they stayed near Munich until they died.
What did they tell you of their experiences between 45 and 57?
Yes, because they said to them, my father stopped working when he was 40 because he had a nervous breakdown, so he retired when he was 40 actually. So he lived on his pension, so he wasn't really... He didn't really work anymore after that age, so he was just in pension. But when the post came, and they said to them, well, we can find you work and housing. Oh, yes, what they did do, because they all moved, a few Germans who were left in Tost, they sort of huddled together, they were frightened. They all went into a special pattern, sort of in houses, all near together, because they were frightened. You know, if one lived here, one lived there, that the Russians were going to do something, so they moved to a different part of the town. And our house, which was near the post and communications, and it stayed not far from the station, it was very convenient. And as far as I know, my mother said, luckily enough, they threw my brother's uniform and burned them, because they were very hard, you know, they sort of came down on people who had soldiers or uniforms, so they burned them. They burned all the possessions, they burned actually everything, paper on paper. But of course, they were very fond of furniture, and so special furniture they just put out in the road, and the great big lorries came and took them apparently to Russia. Because my mother said, we had one of these old-fashioned upright pianos, and she said, it stood there in the snow for 3 or 4 days, and then great, she said, it probably wasn't any good by the time it came to Russia. But it took a lot of furniture, which they liked, and they took them away. But they made out that little house where my parents lived, they made it into headquarters for Tost, and so the Russians came in there. So my parents moved with some friends, and they all lived together. And they said to them, the Russians, or the Poles by then, because Poland took over, And he said, if you take the nationality, we'll look after you. You can go back in your houses, and we'll give you a job, and we'll give you a pension. Now, my father didn't want that. For one thing, he didn't want to be Polish. And secondly, as we, the children, were out in West Germany, they were hoping that you say, oh, well, if you have got your children, you want to get out, go. But they didn't. They didn't do that. They just closed the border, and they had to stay there. And my father, who was very thin and well, he had several breakdowns, actually. He wasn't well. And so my mother had to go and help building roads and farm work. And she wasn't in the 50s. And she wasn't a very strong woman either. And she said, all the gut, when they worked, they picked them up at 8 o'clock in the morning, took them back at 6. All they got at lunchtime, because they didn't want to take the nationality, they had soup with a piece of bread in it. That was the daily rations that they got for a long time. She worked very hard on the farm and road work because she couldn't make my father work. He was too thin and too frail. So he stayed at home. And then, of course, I was... that was sort of the first few years when I came to England, and I earned £2 in wages. And I sent a parcel every week, which cost me 36 shillings and sixpence or whatever it is. And I used to make up a parcel, and the rest came up, I think 4 or 5 shillings came for the postage, and I sent a parcel every week. And you really survived on those parcels. And you could exchange it or whatever it is, you see. And my sisters from Germany then, they sent pills and, you know, the medical things. And I used to send the food, and every week, and for years and years. And that kept them alive, she said, my mother just kept them alive. And when I both sent them coffee or something, they hadn't seen the post, even the post hadn't seen, so they could exchange it with clothing, and could exchange it. So, but that was the only way, she said, they could survive on it. I used to do it for years and years and years. Personal hardship. Funny. So that's how we sort of kept, they kept going. And then about 12 years later, I think, when they came out, and then I went to see them. And we all reunited right after 12 years. But they were very thin. They were very warm, and they were very old. These 12 years had really put 30 years on them. They really looked like my grandparents when I saw them again. They're very frail, but my father didn't survive much. He had 2 years when he died, and my mother stayed on a little bit longer.
What would have happened if they hadn't put that furniture out?
They didn't ask the people themselves. They just went in and took it out. Oh, they didn't ask you. They just took it out. What they liked. They went, they rifled through all the houses and went through. They took what they liked and they took it out. What they didn't like, it stayed. They didn't burn down very many houses because there was no resistance. There was no burning or things like that. And a lot of people had fled, and the people who didn't flee were mostly elderly people. But younger people, they did, even not like I did perhaps to the west, but perhaps to different, you know, to different villages, to their relatives or so. But my mother said there were only about less than half in that little place left of the Germans. They all stuck together, they all huddled together just to have a little bit supporting each other.
So they just lost all their personal possessions?
Oh, everything, yes, there was nothing. They just actually left as they were. Like I did that time when I went to the office in the morning with my sandwiches. We just went out and went to a place where people had fled, I think. And so we were 3 families in 1 small house, and we just sort of stayed together. Yes, I didn't know those people before.
So the people who took these personal possessions, were they Soviet troops?
Yes. And when the Poles came in later on, they weren't very helpful. They might be very nice people, but they're not hard workers. And they probably didn't have the money either. But a lot from what I could hear, actually read in a magazine, that things went from bad to worse. Because even now, there are several people, including my sister, who have gone back just to see what it looked like. And they thought they wished they would never have gone back. It's so dilapidated. Even the roads, she said, either they didn't want to, they didn't have the money or whatever it is. But She said, it's and our house, there's no more. She said, it's absolutely stark. She said, there's no more flowers, no more grapes. The two lime trees on either side, they have been pulled down, probably for firewood. She said, it looked dreadful. It's everything looks very dilapidated. And I've got one friend who is a forester, and he goes hunting every year because there was a lot of forestry around there, and he goes every year shooting. And he said how very neglected everything is. Because he said to me, would you like to go? And I said, no, I fear too much that it is. And a lot of people who wanted to see the old place again, they said he wished he wouldn't have gone. It is neglected. It doesn't look the same place anymore. So I'd rather have it in memory as it was when I saw it last. That was...
What kind of reception did you get in Britain?
I came, funnily enough, to a Jewish family. Very nice family. They wrote through this agency. They had these names, you know, and then they asked these people, but they were just... You got through the agency. And I was allocated to this Mr. Klieger, who lived in Hinchley Wood near Esher. And he was a Jew, and his wife was English. And of course, he knew all about the concentration camp and everything, but he never took it out on me because he wouldn't have had a German in the house. Here again, they were just like any other very nice person. In fact, he was so helpful. And when he had then, but my parents still weren't really able to get out, and he was a manufacturer in underwear and nightwear, and he gave me a lot of clothes to send to my parents. I think they never got those. They got the food parcels because it went partly to the Red Cross. But if you send a lot of it, when you send it privately, it didn't always arrive down there. But he was very helpful, and he gave me a lot of clothes for my parents to send to my parents. They were very kind to me. Nothing saying, oh, you're a German, and all the rest of it, I'm a Jew. Nothing. I was just taken in as anybody else's. I encountered in all my life I've been here now, and it's a long time, I have found nothing else but friendliness, and I've never heard anybody saying a German when they held it against me. I never had any problems from which I expected sometimes, quite rightly, because as I say, I'm a German, we started a war, but I've never had any encounter of nastiness or anything. I've been always very well liked and very well taken on wherever I went to and whatever I've done. So I've been very lucky. It was an extraordinary time, but it was an experience. And I'm 70 years old, and so I'm still working in London now at my old age. So, but it was interesting.